Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to Radio Islam Special Hajj Focus. And this year for our Hajj Safarnama, we're discussing the Russian Hajj Empire and the pilgrimage to Makkah. We're joined on the line now by Professor Aileen Kane, who is the author of this book published by Cornell University Press in December 2015. Good morning and welcome to Radio Islam, Professor Kane.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
You did mention you went, obviously, to Russia on your research. Are there any, you know, what did you find insofar as remnants of these journeys?
Remnants of the journey. So beyond, remnants. You mean the documents that I found in the archives?
Aside from documents, you know, perhaps hostels and things that, were places that people stopped at, shops that they might have stopped at, places that sold clothes, anything like that.
So that's actually a really interesting question, and I would say I found virtually nothing. So Odessa I spent a lot of time in, and I spent quite a bit of time because I had the map, and I knew where they hadn't built an actual building, but they had converted a stone building into what they called a Hajjahane. So it was a place where during Hajj season, they wanted all of the Hajj pilgrims, it could hold 3,000 people, which wasn't even enough because as many as 25,000, I think, was the highest number that I read, they estimated, went through the city during Hajj season. But there was this stone building where they outfitted it so that it had, there were separate quarters for men and women, and there was a masjid in the courtyard. All of this is gone. So the building itself wasn't even standing anymore. And so there are no physical traces of this infrastructure. And, of course, the infrastructure that I talk about that the Russians created and then the Soviets revived, it was largely also, it was railroads and steamships. So, and I think this is part of also, I'm quite sure this is part of why when you think of the Ottomans sponsoring the Hajj, if you go to Jordan and parts of Israel, these Middle Eastern countries, you'll see remnants of, there's a very good book by Andrew Peterson, an archaeologist, you'll see remnants of the old, of these fortified routes that the Ottomans sponsored for the Hajj caravans. You'll see they built cisterns along the way. These physical remnants are still there. So it's possible to reconstruct from physical evidence, not just documents, Ottoman sponsorship of the Hajj, but you don't have the same physical remnants in the Russian case. And so I would say this is another reason why it's been easy to overlook this story, because in the landscape of Russia and the former Soviet Union today, you don't see any traces of it. And I would say also there was a Muslim cemetery in Odessa that was destroyed in the 1930s. The Soviets bulldozed it to make a park named after Vladimir Lenin. So had that cemetery still been there, I think somebody might have picked up this story, because they would have noticed that, you know, many people who were on their way to the Hajj, I know this from reading documents from the archives, died in Odessa and then were buried in the cemetery. And Odessa had never had a large, at least in the Russian period, had never had a large Muslim community. So in part, it's that, you know, the physical remnants aren't there. Some of them were destroyed in the Soviet period. But, you know, I do think if there had been more of this, like you have in the Ottoman case, that this story might have been written about earlier than my book, which is really the first book. Even in Russian, you don't have any histories. This is the first one of the Hajj under Russian rule.
Usually when you read Hajj memoirs or Hajj journeys, you always have a central character. That's kind of like the tradition, as you know, from the Ottoman perspective. In your book, aside from the mention of a certain governor and someone who you wrote about, there wasn't really a central figure, and I'm assuming that's because there aren't any memoirs as such that exist by a particular person.
Do you mean like famous memoirs from like
not a famous memoir, but like, you know, this particular person who was born on this particular day said this about the Hajj. They obviously aren't as popular.
You know, it's possible they exist. I read some of these. This is something that I hope other scholars will look into. I'm sure there are loads and loads of Hajj memoirs that, I think I read 7 or 8 for this book, so I was reading those in addition. I was trying to weave together state sources, so what Russian officials thought about the Hajj, and then how Muslims actually thought about it and experienced it. So, but overall, I mean, I read newspapers and written in Turkic languages by Muslims describing their experiences. But, to answer your question, we don't know a lot about Hajj memoirs. These have been better studied in other contexts. And I would guess that in the former Soviet Union, former Russian Empire, there are many, some of them are starting to be published now. In Nizhny Novgorod and Ufa, these places where in the, what's called the Volga-Ural region, you're starting to see people discover manuscripts from the 19th century and then translate them into modern Tatar or Russian and publish them. But I would guess that there are lots and lots of these that have never been cataloged, never examined. There just has not been interest, or really in the Soviet period, much of a possibility of researching this. So I would say a lot of work remains to be done on this, and I don't think anyone really knows what exists in former Soviet lands, and I hope others will take up this subject and look more closely at collections of Hajj memoirs.
I hope so too. Just before we end off, I know I did say please select your favorite, part of the book, but we may not be able to do that, but you can give us the page numbers. You mentioned, and I'm reading from your Connecticut College page about the relevance of this book and this journey, this Russian Hajj, to us today. And you say, we're in a moment of high hysteria about Islam, and it comes from a lack of understanding about Islam and Muslims beyond terrorist attacks that are carried out by a small number of people. So I like what you say about how the Russians at that particular time disregarded their fears about Islam and they acted with optimism, etc. Maybe you can just expand on that as we conclude.
Yes, so you're reading from text from the website of Connecticut College where I teach, where they've put up my book, and they asked me to talk about how do I see this book that is about the late 19th and early 20th century, how do I see it as relevant to today? And I would say, first of all, the two contexts are in many ways very different, of course. In many ways, the stereotypes that were developed in the 19th century, the sort of Orientalist stereotypes about Islam as a threat to European empires, as antithetical to Western culture, they're very much with us still today. And in the late 19th century, also there was a lot of fear. I spoke about this earlier in the interview. This fear of Islam, and at the time, it had a lot to do with the fact that, as I mentioned, Europeans are ruling. Most of the world's Muslims are under European rule, and there's a fear that they're going to revolt. Against, there's going to be some great anti-colonial revolt that's going to spread all across the Muslim world, and this, of course, will be bad for European empires, which don't want, if you're an empire, you don't want to end. So what struck me about this book is that, yes, there were fears. Many Tsarist officials said, they also misunderstood the Hajj in many ways. They thought, why would anyone want to do this long journey, thousands of miles? Why would they want to endure this kind of deprivation? And in the minds of some, the Hajj was equated with fanaticism. This is a sign of how fanatical Muslims are, that they're doing this arduous journey. They couldn't understand the point of it. They didn't understand the religious significance of it. So yes, I'm not denying that many people had these kinds of fears and didn't understand Islam. But ultimately, the story I tell is that officials say, we're not going to ban this. We can't ban it. Muslims are going to go on the Hajj whether we tell them they can or can't anyway. But also, there's a reason to be optimistic about what we can gain from having this Islamic inheritance as part of our as part of the empire. As I mentioned in the book, it's something like 10 to 15% of the population of the Russian Empire is Muslim. That's also true today. Russia has 14 million Muslims. That's the largest. That makes it the largest Muslim population on the continent. We often hear that it's France, but if you look at all of Europe, Russia actually has the largest Muslim population of any European country. So, you know, there was a choice. They could have chosen to try to repress and ban and forbid the Hajj, and they didn't do that. Because they said, well, by helping our Muslim subjects make the Hajj, maybe this will ingratiate them, to the Tsarist government. This will help us integrate them into the empire. So of course it was imperialistic. It was opportunistic. It wasn't for some great respect for Islam that they thought this way. But as I see it, the choice, overwhelmingly, and this was the side that won, they chose to lead with optimism rather than fear. And I think that it has relevance for us today.
Absolutely. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you this morning, Professor Kane. And your interview will play out over our Hajj broadcast over the next few days on Radio Islam. Before you leave, though, could you tell us, you know, which particular chapter, which page of your book did you really love and what it was about?
I love the beginning. I would say the first chapter, I love sort of diving into the story, but just the experiences, sort of reconstructing the experiences of these early Muslims. We have sort of shreds of evidence that I was able to find, but Muslims from the Caucasus making the pilgrimage through land routes, getting to Mecca, and then the sort of encountering Russian officials on the ground in places like Beirut, which was part of Ottoman Syria at the time, and these first interactions, ground-level interactions, and how they were transformative on both sides.
Okay, perfect. Thanks again once for joining us on Radio Islam, and all the best for your next book on the Russian Hajj, hopefully.
Oh,